Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We'll get started in just a moment here. We're just waiting for Judge Kirk to rejoin us. Okay, so we are now at the fourth case on our oral argument calendar today, October 12th, and this case is State of Minnesota Respondent versus Lakeke Latrice Williams Appellant. The case number is A22-0214. And counsel, I would just ask you to do your arguments this morning from the lectern in the middle, which will show how much time is remaining. As I know you both know, you will each get 15 minutes to present your arguments, and counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are making an audio recording of the argument this morning that will be available on the court's website. And so I would just ask that before you begin your argument, you identify yourself and the party you're representing. And additionally, I encourage you to let us know if you have any preference as to how we address you or your client, how your client's name is pronounced. I'm sure I butchered it in calling the case, so feel free to correct me there. And that ends my remarks. We are now ready to begin the arguments. We'll first hear from counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Emily Asp, and I'm appearing here today on behalf of Appellant Lakeke Williams. The parties do not dispute that the sole question presented to this court today is whether there was sufficient probable cause to grant the warrant to search the apartment registry. Under the facts of this case, there was insufficient probable cause to support the warrant. This is for two reasons. First, the police did not sufficiently corroborate information provided to them by the confidential informant. And second, none of the other circumstances in this case weigh in favor of finding the confidential informant credible. Based on the information received from the confidential informant, police corroborated that there is a sober house in northeast Minneapolis with a black fence on the front, and that Ms. Williams may have lived there. These are easy to obtain facts and are therefore insufficient to support a finding of probable cause. Much like in State v. Albrecht, wherein there was insufficient probable cause when police corroborated only the location of the house and the ownership of the defendant's vehicle, the easily obtained facts in this case are insufficient to support probable cause.
So if I could just interrupt you, in the state's brief, there's a suggestion that because this was not a search of a house or an apartment, the standard of probable cause should be different because the subject of the search was a list of tenants of the sober house. We should be looking at some other standard. Do you agree with that argument?
I disagree with that argument, Your Honor. Case law is clear that probable cause is required in order to conduct a search absent exceptional circumstances. A search warrant is still a search warrant, and police cannot get around the requirements needed for such a warrant.
But what about the reasonable suspicion, articulable suspicion standard in the, I'm blanking on the name of the case, but with the hotel guest registry?
Yes, Your Honor. That case, State versus Leonard.
Thank you. I knew it started with an L. I was blanking on the actual name, though.
Absolutely. In that case, the facts were a little bit different because in that case, not only was it a hotel registry as opposed to an apartment registry, but there was also a statute that allowed the police access to that registry. And so in this case, we don't have a statute that suggests that the police should get free access to such a registry.
So you're arguing just that the full probable cause standard applies to a list of tenants in a building in which unit the tenants live in.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And by the full probable cause standard, to just pick up on Judge Siegel's terminology, would that be the regular old standard that we apply in determining whether there's probable cause to search an apartment for drugs, for example, that there's a fair probability that there's going to be evidence of a crime, you know, in the thing to be searched?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's the standard that we suggest should apply here.
And is there any argument to the contrary, as to the specific standard?
Your Honor, are you...
That was a terrible question. At any point in time during this case, has anyone argued that some other type of specific probable cause standard or lesser standard should apply?
Your Honor, there's some discussion in the record that mentions the State versus Leonard case and discusses that the possibility that reasonable suspicion would apply. However, all the parties agreed in this situation in the briefing that because there was a warrant that was requested, that the probable cause standard should apply because that's the avenue that the police decided to go in this case. Because of that, and because of the reasons that I just stated, we believe that probable cause is the appropriate standard in order to determine whether they had enough evidence to support the warrant in this case. Beyond the facts that the police corroborated from the police, the facts presented in the warrant do not support a finding that the informant's tip was reliable. The information provided by the informant was sparse and could have been given by anyone who knew Ms. Williams. Nothing in the warrant says why the informant knew Ms. Williams was selling drugs out of her apartment. The affidavit does not indicate that the informant had given reliable information in the past. It contains no statements against interest, and the affidavit doesn't say how the informant knew that Ms. Williams was selling heroin out of the apartment. Finally, the affidavit does not state that the informant came forward voluntarily.
And in fact, I mean, the affidavit kind of suggests otherwise in referring to the person as a cooperating defendant, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And case law, which we cite in our brief, suggests that that fact should actually go against a finding of probable cause in this case or in any case because of the potential motivations that there could be behind giving the information that's present in the warrant.
But counsel, isn't your problem here there was no search of the individual unit until, 10 or 12 days later after the initial gathering of the correct apartment and the dog being brought there? I guess it was 10 or 12 days later that the dog was brought to the apartment. It's just kind of an odd fact circumstance, wouldn't you agree?
Your Honor, it's correct that in this situation, the warrant that we're discussing today was only for the apartment registry, but that information was necessary for the police to be able to find the information that was that they needed in order to search the apartment and the cars. After they received the information on the apartment registry, they learned that Ms. Williams had changed apartments, that she was no longer in the apartment that was on her her driver's license. And so even though in this circumstance all they were looking at was the apartment registry, that was an important thing for them to acquire so that they could subsequently go and perform the dog sniff.
But could they have taken their dog and the manager allowed them into the building and gone down every apartment door?
Your Honor, it's...
That without getting a search warrant at all. I mean, that's the perplexing, one of the perplexing questions here.
That's a fair point, Your Honor. And we understand that their ability to, they could have performed a dog sniff and figured out the information potentially. However, without the information that they received from the apartment registry, they wouldn't have been able to know exactly which apartment to sniff. They would have gone to a different apartment, the apartment that was perhaps listed on her driver's license or some other information, based on some other information, which we don't have here. And they would have performed the dog sniff, and who knows whether or not they would have found anything. But they wouldn't have been able to go to the door that ultimately was Ms. Williams' apartment without the information that they received from this warrant. Beyond that, the police did end up going forward and getting a warrant in this case. And because of that, we should be looking at whether or not they had sufficient information in order to support the finding of probable cause for the warrant itself.
So we're punishing them, in a sense, for doing more than they needed to do?
Your Honor, I mean,
this was a sober house. I assume the house had some rules about having possession of controlled substances on the premises that would make this maybe a less secure home environment than you would have in a home that was just an apartment, not a sober house, so to speak.
Your Honor, we don't know whether or not there were any specific rules pertaining to the sober house. That's not in the record. But I think that there are a number of reasons why somebody would want to keep information that they're living in a sober house protected. So there are a lot of important privacy interests that would suggest that we should be careful about performing these sorts of searches where police are going to determine who lives in a particular location. So in State versus Leonard, one of the things that the court noted was the fact that somebody could be living or staying in a hotel for the purposes of either going to a political convention or seeking medical assistance. And that decision could be something that they didn't want others to know about. And the court found that that was an important reason why there was a privacy interest in the hotel registry itself. Now, with respect to an apartment registry, we know here that the individual was living in a sober facility where they could be receiving medical treatment or mental health treatment or any sort of other things to assist them with their addiction. And it's entirely possible and that individuals living there wouldn't want their information to be given out or freely given out. And so ensuring that the police had a sufficient level of suspicion that the individual was living there and that there was a reason why they should go in and search for that information is important in this case.
Is that question really before us, though? I mean, isn't the only question before us today whether there was probable cause?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. The only question today is whether or not there was probable cause to support the warrant. And we submit that the information that was present in the affidavit, which is the only information that we can look at to determine whether there was sufficient probable cause, was insufficient.
If we're talking policy, as you were a little bit earlier, wouldn't the police be motivated by a policy of wanting to take action against someone who may be living in a sober house and supplying drugs to people who are trying to stay clean and sober?
It's possible that they could have that motivation. We don't know that. And to contrast this case from State versus Leonard, we know that there isn't a statutory reason why they would have that motivation. But ultimately, regardless of what their motivations might be, what evidence supports the warrant is within the affidavit that supports the warrant. And we don't have any of that information about what their potential motivations were or what information they knew beyond the facts that they were given to them by the confidential informant and then corroborated by the police. I'm happy to respond to any other questions you may have. However, in sum, for the reasons stated today in our briefing and from me in this podium, we respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. John Schmidt, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The issue before the court is limited to the search to obtain the list of tenants and the current units in the sober house. That issue was framed below at the district court, which is at the appellant's addendum at 9, where the parties agreed the determinative issue is the information by the cooperating defendant. So it is a limited issue. I did raise the issue of and put in the brief about this is a search for the tenants, just the registry, not into the apartment. I think it is of note that the police did a thorough and proper investigation here, and that's why I put it in the brief. Leonard does not apply to these facts. I think they, and only because of how it was framed below in the district court.
So you would agree there's not a different probable cause standard that we're looking at here? And I noted that there was no authority.
Nope, I agree. There's not a different probable cause standard. I think there could have been an argument that they could have raised in the district court that reasonable articular suspicion applies based on the Leonard case. That argument was waived because the parties agreed that it's all about cooperation of the cooperating defendant. So that's the sole issue that's before the court as it was raised in the district court, and I'm sticking to what was raised in the district court.
But counsel, this goes back to law school maybe, but when we're looking at probable cause in relation to searches and we talk about the different kinds of searches there are, and the usual examples would be open field, cars, and a person's home, which he's got the highest standard of what should be required. It seems that this one is somewhere in between because it's not quite the person's home. It's at the threshold of the person's home, but without entering the home that you're looking for, which is the address or the dog walking by. Does that have any impact on the way we view this?
I agree that she has a lower expectation of privacy in the registry of her home, and I agree that, let's say in a normal apartment building where the public has access into the lobby of an apartment building where the registry is listed there, and you can just see that. That if that were the case here, that is a much lower expectation of privacy that would exist here. But given the way it was framed in the district court, I think I'm stuck with it, and that the issue before the court here is limited to the cooperation of the cooperating defendant. And so as to the cooperation of the cooperating defendant, and again, I agree, Judge Kirk, I think the police did a thorough investigation, and I think and if this were to be suppressed, it's punishing police for doing a thorough investigation. But they did do a thorough investigation, and they did cooperate evidence from the cooperating defendant. And the biggest piece of evidence, which the district court relied on, in its motion denying the motion to reconsider, is that the fact that the appellant was living in a sober house. And that is towards the end of the district court's decision. That is not information that is publicly available. And that is information, even as counsel said, that you would want to potentially keep private, that you're living in a sober house. And that's at the addendum of page 13.
And just so that I'm clear, the fact that this building was a sober house is the information, the corroborating information?
The fact that the appellant was living at the sober house, not just that the building was a sober house, that okay. The appellant was living there. And that's what at page 13, that's what the court said. The fact that a defendant is a resident of a sober living facility, however, is not so easily attainable. That is a piece of information that makes this different from Albright. It's also different from Albright in the fact, and I agree, a cooperating defendant is different than a confidential, reliable informant. But the cooperating defendant is a known person, whereas in Albright, it was an anonymous tip. And so that's another distinguishing fact from the Albright case. But the police here did corroborate that. So one, the cooperating defendant was not anonymous. Two, that this is a sober house, that it's located in Northeast Minneapolis, that there's a black fence around it, that they went to the place and they saw the appellant in her car with Texas license plates, which, and again, in the motion to reconsider, the court said the exact location of where she was in her car wasn't in the initial affidavit.
And the Texas license plate part of it wasn't in the affidavit either.
I thought the Texas license plate was. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't think so.
Okay. So Texas license plate is not part of the corroboration then. But in terms of the rest of it, but in particular in the fact that's not easily obtainable, that she was living in a sober house, is sufficient corroboration to get a warrant to go and do further investigation, which is exactly what the police did here. Unless the court has any other questions, I will rest on the briefs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A few brief things. First of all, Judge Siegel, you asked about whether the police could have done a dog sniff of every apartment, just gone up and down the hallway. And we don't think that that would have been possible because that would violate the Fourth Amendment rights of all of the other tenants and not just Ms. Williams. But with respect to the biggest piece of evidence being the fact that Ms. Williams is living in a sober house, the fact that she's living in a particular location is something that any number of acquaintances could know, whether it's one of her friends or somebody else who perhaps was living in that apartment building. Any person could potentially know that fact about her. So
what was missing here? And Albrecht, as Mr. Schmidt pointed out, it was an anonymous caller, and this is somebody the police know who it is. But why isn't all of that together enough?
Well, if you look at the State versus Ross case, where they kind of go through some of the various factors that the police can use to corroborate a confidential informant, they mentioned some things that could have been done by the police in order to have sufficient evidence to support a finding of probable cause. So in being involved in a controlled purchase is one of those things. Understanding additional information about why the confidential informant knows that there are drugs at the premises, that's something that was present in Albrecht and that still was insufficient to support a finding of probable cause. So in Albrecht, the individual mentioned why they knew the drugs were in the premises, that they had helped to package drugs at that location, that they had gone there a number of times and seen drugs in that location. Here we don't have any of that information, and that would have also been something to help support a finding of probable cause in this case. But ultimately, all of the facts that were corroborated here and that the police mentioned in the affidavit were things that were easily obtained, which under Albrecht and then subsequently as stated in Ross, is insufficient to support a finding of probable cause. I'm happy to answer any other questions. Otherwise, We respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's decision.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to us, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame. And this concludes the in-courtroom portion of our calendar. We have another oral argument that we will be hearing via Zoom beginning at 12:15 and a non-oral conference as well. Thank you.
All right.